Welcome to Going Beyond Medicine with Elaine Groman. Conversations with people who are working to make a difference in our world. Now here's your host for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio, Elaine Groman.
Good afternoon. This is Elaine Groman. This is Empower Radio, and it is Going Beyond Medicine. And the show, Going Beyond Medicine, is really interviewing, finding, and bringing to the airwaves people that are really making a difference in our world, literally going beyond medicine, not just looking at the quick fix, but looking at how we can do things sustainably to help to bring health in all dimensions back to our life, in our body, mind, our spirit, and our emotions, and most importantly, our environment, because the body we live in is our environment. So today, I'm really delighted to have a wonderful young woman here who's just a magical being. Her name is Sarah Tennant. She happens to be a daughter of a dear friend of mine, Lori Tennant, who we'll have to have on the show at another time. And Sarah is just an amazing woman who has an understanding of Chinese medicine, acupuncture in particular, and she has studied very long and hard to bring this understanding back to Michigan. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a delight. So I am just fascinated at how you began this journey to want to understand Chinese philosophy and the Chinese tradition of taking care of the self. How did that all begin?
It kind of began in an interesting way for me. Unlike a lot of my colleagues in school who found Chinese medicine because of some kind of ailment, I actually started studying the language in sixth grade. And the first time I went to China, I was 12 years old. It was an eighth grade trip here in the Metro Detroit area, strangely. So I went for about 2.5 weeks and toured all over China, went on one of the last cruises down the Yangtze River. And really, I think that just put this new perspective in my head from a very young age of how I saw them really incorporating a lot of these techniques in their medicine system into their daily life.
What on earth made you as a kid want to understand how to speak Chinese?
I have no idea. Really, I think
if you
it just
see her, she looks
so
like she came
now.
Right out of the Irish Islands, and with this little fairy like being flaming red hair. I'm sure that when you were in China, that everybody gaped at you. It's like, where did this little redhead magical being come from?
I think I went for it because it was different.
Yeah, very cool. So you went there because you were learning the language. Mm-hmm. What did you experience when you were there that was different?
Oh, so many things. I mean, just seeing the country, how everyone went to the park at 7 a.m. and was doing Tai Chi or Qigong together in a community setting every single day, and incorporating spices into food, and even how the hospitals are run too, just based on herbal medicine. And it was just really intriguing to me, not to mention just the culture as well, seeing a lot of different ancient pagodas and things that are now underwater, actually, just really opened my eyes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this has now been 15 years ago, excuse me. And you're how old, if you don't mind my asking?
I turned 30 in a month.
So, wow, half of your life, literally, you have been studying this ancient culture.
Yeah.
And what did you find? What was the reaction that you found you had when you noticed people doing things communally, not just because it's required, but because it enhances life?
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing people, sitting at parks after they're doing some kind of physical exercise or meditation together, sitting and having tea and talking and just communicating with one another. I mean, we get so far away from that these days with technology and phones in our face instead. I think just that right there, just connecting with another person, can be healing in itself.
Mm-hmm. So at what point did you decide, Sarah, to actually study Chinese medicine?
Yeah, so my undergrad I did in Boulder, Colorado. I studied psychology and neuroscience because I always wanted to be in the healthcare field in some way and just understand the brain and how it affects our body physically and our health. And so I never really saw myself in the Western medical field, but by my time my senior year rolled around, I realized that I wanted to do some kind of medicine, and I had the opportunity to go and work in a Chinese medicine hospital in Kunming and do a public health and traditional Chinese medicine
survey
program.
Was that while you were getting your undergrad, or was that after
It wasn't supposed to be originally, but my senior year, my school actually adopted it on for elective credits as a study abroad program, and I finished, I walked in May and then moved to China and finished my last 8 credits there doing
this. Oh my gosh. And yeah. That was when?
That was my senior year of college, so 2009.
Wow. Okay. So then is that what was your immersion again in Chinese culture? Was that kind of the impetus for you to say, oh, wait a minute, I really want to have this be my lifehood?
Yeah, and that's when I was considering actually doing my master's of science in acupuncture and Chinese medicine, but was still uncertain. I originally found a school in Seattle, the one I did end up going to, Bastyr University for nutrition. But then once I actually started to see acupuncture on there and see that nutrition was part of Chinese medicine, I was thinking that maybe that would be a better route for me, and then had this opportunity and was like, you know, I'll go try this in the most extreme environment in China in a hospital, and if I like it, I'll come back and do it. So I did.
Okay, so it must have been an extraordinary experience for you having, first of all, an understanding of the language, which is huge.
That has certainly helped me
yes,
a lot.
And then because of that comfort level that you had with the language, there were less barriers for you in terms of really being able to be right in the core of what was happening. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that was...
Yeah, really, that was something when I started actually seeing patients in the clinic that I didn't even realize was the case, but some of my colleagues and friends had pointed out to me that we would learn something in class that day and I was able to immediately apply it in practice because I already had kind of this baseline to go from that I felt confident from, so I could just put it into action and use it. Mm. I didn't even realize that, but...
So in a little bit, we're going to talk about how you've actually brought it back to Michigan, because this is where you're originally from,
yeah.
Right? And I want you to know to my listeners, again, my guest is Sarah Tennant, and her her website, which is really very clear and very thorough, is www.TerapeutiCS.com, which is located in Birmingham, Michigan. So I really applaud you for taking the time to and believing in yourself. And always you had the belief of your sweet mama here, who has always just said you can do anything you want to do. And by golly, we're going to do it laughing and singing the whole way. So tell me what you find, Sarah, is the fundamental thing that needs to change in how we see ourselves as human beings and how we see our health as you say, as an ecosystem.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing your website.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've gotten so far away from actually seeing the not only the body as a whole, but us as a whole within nature. And that's one of the first and most basic principles in Chinese medicine that we learn is that our body is a whole and we are a whole within nature. So there are even things that come up seasonally that everyone as a collective experiences. But then we each have our own individual patterns and things that we go towards in life. So I think really, you know, Western medicine has compartmentalized us so much into different systems without communication between even doctors a lot of times, that how can our body communicate with itself when we're just being put apart into these different boxes?
Right.
We don't work that way. And it's more than just physical, too. It's going into all of the levels of the body, from physical, emotional, to spiritual as well.
Well, of course, and because what people need to remember or to even learn, perhaps, if they didn't know, is every thought we have creates a chemical response.
Absolutely.
In the body, and therefore the cells, the organism is going to start to react unwittingly without us necessarily knowing that we are the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
We're the trigger of what's happening.
Yeah, there are molecules of our emotions that do have a physiological response. And we're just now, I think, at a really cool time where we're seeing the actual Western science of things and the more spiritual sciences, or what has been called metaphysical or New Age things, actually come together in a way that actually this is all real life that we're experiencing.
In fact, I was given a talk the other day at a local hospital with a neurologist who is specialist in movement disorder, and really the energy of the neurological system that could cause a movement disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting because I said to people what they really need to understand is Western medicine is New Age medicine.
Exactly.
What we're looking at is they have the term flipped, really,
yeah.
Because what is ancient has been here since humanity began. Mm-hmm. And certainly you are aware that acupuncture is minimally 5,000 years old.
Yeah.
Minimally.
I mean, that's what we have recorded, actually.
Yes, yes. So I think that we need to change that verbiage a little bit, mm-hmm. because the allopathic model is fairly new.
Very new.
And challenging to the body.
Definitely. Very and that was something too, when I was, the first hospital I worked in China, one of my teachers really stressed the point that we're not saying that Western medicine is bad. There's a really great place and time and place for Western medicine. It's about knowing when and where that is. And it's emergency and surgery, and it has saved so many lives, but
yes, absolutely.
That's not always the first go-to. You know, we mm-hmm. have all the other things that we can resolve first or prevent from happening. And that's about restoring the patterns of the body.
Yes, yes. Helping the body heal.
Yeah.
Right. So again, my guest, Sarah Tennant, is now back in Michigan, in Birmingham, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And when did you decide to open up your site, your mm-hmm. center, however you refer to it as?
Yeah. So I've been working out in Seattle as well. I still work out there occasionally at a different practice. And it was just time to be back home around my family. I have a little brother who just graduated high school, and my grandparents are getting older. So just wanted to be closer to them, and had the opportunity to share space with my mom, who's an amazing photographer, mm-hmm. who has been transitioning into her botanical artwork. So it seemed like a perfect fit to have my private practice in a space that had beautiful pieces of botanical artwork.
Absolutely. So when you were in China and you were acting as a practitioner there, mm-hmm. what did you notice? How did you notice the receptivity of the people mm-hmm. versus here in the United States, where there are people have a different mindset about what it means to care for themselves versus here in the U.S.
Well, especially with herbal medicine, I see that in China, actually, acupuncture is not the first thing that they go to. It's herbal medicine first. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the reverse in the Western world. We are known as acupuncturists instead of Chinese medical practitioners here in some states, but where acupuncture is the first kind of go-to, and it's used for more pain management, kind of still fitting into the same system as our Western world does too. But they'll really go to Chinese herbs first and take that more regularly for mild conditions or just preventing certain things as well. And they use it in a lot more advanced ways too. They'll, you know, have different band-aids with herbal concoctions on them that they'll put onto points to help prevent miscarriages. And they'll actually do herbal decoctions in IV bags. Like if someone is having a heart attack, they'll actually use an herb called Dan Shen, which is salvia or red sage, in that IV bag instead. So they're very far advanced in that too. We can't really use the herbs in that way here because we don't have the facilities to actually make them here. So we can't really quality control test them too. And I think we're, you know, a little ways away from that too. But it's hard to actually get people to be into herbal medicine sometimes, especially with the Chinese herbs. I try and use it more in the way that people can incorporate it into their daily life by either cooking with things like making a broth with just a few herbs in, or having a tea. Most of us know how to make a cup of tea pretty easily. So, and that's just so beneficial. You can make a cup of tea for someone else and share it with them too. And that is herbal medicine as well. So trying to think of some new ways that people will be more open to taking some of those things too, when really they're growing in our backyard and they've been here for so long. And this is indigenous medicine first and foremost. And it's really, we're remembering these things and bringing that back.
It's interesting that you're talking about teas, because I recently read an article, and I honestly can't remember where I saw it, but they were talking about the toxic levels of pesticides that are in our teas that mm-hmm. are on the shelves every day that we don't realize. Mm-hmm. And so if we can go out into our own garden and have something that we could just drop a mint leaf or something, just as an example, into the water to let the natural oils in the plant to dissipate into the water mm-hmm. and then take that. And I was shocked to see these teas that we're so accustomed to, and I don't want to name names, but because I don't remember exactly, but it was like, oh my gosh, this isn't even regulated.
Well, unfortunately for us, the U.S. is the only country that actually will ship out and export our highest quality herb, and we have very little expectations and quality control as far as what we bring into the country. Whereas in China, they won't even sell their first, second, or third high quality herbs. They keep that for themselves, obviously, and then they will ship out ones that are lower quality, except for a few companies that will do more high quality too.
When you were in China, Sarah, again, my guest is Sarah Tennant, who is an acupuncturist, and she really works with women's health in herbal medicine in Dearborn, Michigan. So is there a phone number where people can reach you just as we're talking here?
Yeah, so my work phone is 248-971-0319, and my practice is called Red Cedar Health in Birmingham, Michigan on Eaton Street.
Okay, great. So one of the things that I'm curious about is, as you've worked with people in China, and obviously you're seeing the challenges that are presented here, is there any way of, are you seeing any collaboration between, you know, different organizations trying to bring the best of everything to healthcare?
Like in China or here?
Both.
In both,
to have it be a collaborative thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're inching there slowly in the U.S., but in China, they definitely have an integrated system. I mean, even when I was there back in 2009, the hospital that I worked in was a Chinese medicine hospital, but right next door is a Western hospital. Mm-hmm. So they would have Western medicine hospitals, Chinese hospitals, and then a combination of both. So they really do use it where, you know, where it's needed. Like, even if I had a friend actually that tripped on the street and cut his chin open, and our doctors were like, well, you know, we can do stitches for you here, but you're probably going to have a bigger scar. We don't have as much numbing things. And if you go next door to the Western hospital, you'll have less of a scar and they can numb you. So he went over there.
Right.
So they will work together there.
And then herbal medicines could be used to prevent infection kind of thing to boost the immune system.
Exactly.
Because the immune system is immediately reacting to a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Whereas in the U.S., it depends on the doctor. It depends on the organization or hospital if they're really open to some of those things. And unfortunately, our licensing does go state to state. So it is different with each state. Okay. Not only who knows about how much it can be beneficial and what it can help with, but then even if insurance covers it and things like that, too.
Okay. Well, let's talk about those two things, how it's changing state to state, or how it is different state to state. Mm-hmm. And what acupuncture can do.
Yeah.
So tell me, what is the barriers that you found as an acupuncturist, as a practicing acupuncturist here in the United States?
Yeah. Well, you know, Washington and Michigan are very different as far as our scope of practice.
You're talking about Washington State.
Washington State. Okay. Yeah. Seattle is the other place that I practice because we have one of the more defined scopes of anywhere in Washington State right now. We're called East Asian Medical Practitioners, and we just have more of a defined scope. It includes Qigong and a lot of other aspects of Chinese medicine that people don't think about, with herbal medicine and Tui Na, which is a type of Chinese therapeutic massage. So that's all detailed out in our scope. So we're also seen as medical practitioners in that state, so we can accept insurance.
Okay.
And most people actually have at least 12 visits as an essential benefit already on their plan.
In most coverages and most healthcare coverages?
In most all, Washington, because we have that defined scope. Mm. And they're just more aware of different complementary medicines that can be used. Whereas in Michigan, we're still not licensed here. We're just registered acupuncturists. We have to submit the same credentials. It's just another title. But it makes it so that we're not actually seen as a licensed practitioner. So what comes with that is not being able to accept insurance. Like, I have a cash-based practice here, which is great because I can offer discounts and, you know, have a sliding scale for people that need that as well.
Right.
Where I can't do that when I'm locked into an insurance contract. So it's a plus and a minus. But when I started school, there were only about 12 states that even recognized acupuncture as a medical field to practice. And that has increased significantly since I finished school. So.
Now, Sarah, is that because of the legislature, or who is the governing body that's making that distinction state by state?
It's the health department. Mm. Yeah. And I would say the biggest challenge too, as far as other fields in medicine that we kind of butt heads with are chiropractors and PTs. Not that we don't work together with a lot of great ones as well, but there's something called dry needling that essentially is acupuncture, but a lot of PTs and chiropractors can go to just to 30 hours of training and then be able to needle these points. points, and they're mainly doing it for to hit trigger points, to reset muscles, but it can be very unsafe if you're not trained to actually know what structures are below and how to safely do that, and actually what red flags to look for as well if there is something that comes up that shouldn't happen. So I was supervised in over 3,000 clinical hours, and that was just in my master's program. So that's a pretty significant difference.
Was that in China, or that was in Seattle?
That was just here in Seattle.
Okay.
So there's been many more in China as well.
Okay, so let's kind of let people understand what actually is the umbrella of Chinese medicine, and what is under that umbrella?
Yeah, absolutely. So Chinese medicine encompasses many things, starting with Qigong and Tai Chi practices, which
okay, let's define those.
I know, I definitely will.
Okay.
So those are two types of Qi cultivation techniques. So Qi, we're referring to as kind of our vital energy, almost breath, it's referred to as well. It's one of those words we don't really have an actually correct Western translation for, because it can be many things, but it really is our vital energy. So Qigong and Tai Chi are very simple body movements and breath techniques and hand mudras a lot of times as well, where we're actually redirecting our energy and attention to organs and meridian systems to not only access the memories that are there for us to understand ourselves more deeply, but also to actually activate our own internal energy and medicine there too.
Okay, I want to stop you and kind of go a little bit more point by point, because you're using terms that you're accustomed to, but the listeners, literally people all over the world, can listen to this.
Okay.
So the word qi is just the word energy in Chinese.
Yeah, and it's spelled Q-I.
Q-I. Mm-hmm. So in Japanese, it's ki.
Mm-hmm.
In East Indian, it's prana.
Right.
And so we're really talking about the energy that's generated by the living earth that is then used in our body to give our body directions.
Yeah, and you'll see it spelled in many different ways, like C-H-I, Q-I, K-E. This is cross-culturally, this idea has been spread and understood in that way.
Right.
The character itself in Chinese is very interesting, because it has a simmering pot of rice underneath what would be the radical for a human. So it's like this cooking cauldron of rice that is like us cooking our energy.
Mm. So when Qigong and Tai Chi, what we're doing is learning how to bring energy into our body and to interact with the living world, which is where the energy is available.
Yeah, it brings a deeper sense of awareness within ourself, but also within our environment and what's going on around us and the interactions between us and others and other things.
So Tai Chi is more of what most people would think of as a slow moving, quote unquote, exercise.
Yeah.
And people don't realize, I've taken Tai Chi and I really want to take it again when you offer it, it looks simple, but it's very complex.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it takes a lot.
It's a workout.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It's probably more of a workout than you bouncing off the walls in a gym somewhere, because you're doing a lot to the physical structure. And sensing it.
Yeah. And if you have that qi activation present as well, you can send that into your muscles and bones and have that much more of a strengthening that occurs, not only to your physical body, but to that energy system that is there too.
So is that presumably then someone who is healthy and able-bodied, they would be doing the Tai Chi exercises, whereas somebody who's having Qigong done is having like a sharing of energy from a practitioner to help to jumpstart someone else?
Well, that is one thing that we're never with when we're doing Qigong as a healing modality. You're never using your own energy.
Never.
For someone else.
Or an energy healing.
Yeah.
Never.
We're never doing that. So our Dantian, which is in the lower abdomen, it's like our lower abdomen center, kind of like our savings account. We're constantly building that. So with Qigong, we can actually put money into our savings account, but we use that for ourselves. That's not what we use for healing. Really, we're just channeling and just being an empty vessel to help that energy activate, really.
Okay.
And Tai Chi is more of that exercise movement to it. And then all martial arts would be under this umbrella of Qigong too, where martial arts are from this Qi cultivation techniques.
Right. And many people have the misunderstanding, thinking that martial arts is a fight only.
Right.
It's actually intended to prevent a fight, By redirecting energy.
Exactly. And you actually don't need to apply any force if you can anticipate the force coming from someone else and use that.
Right. That's, I think, an important distinction, because in a lot of Hollywood movies, we see these martial artists really not depicted in what they're actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, dramatic effects. So when we get back, we're going to take a short break in just a minute. I want to talk more about acupuncture and then the other things that you're talking about, this tunic, is that how you say it, massage?
Twina.
Mm-hmm. Massage, cranial psychotherapy, visceral manipulation, all of the things that you are able to provide your patients so that they can begin to work well. And also cupping. I've had cupping, you know, mm-hmm. people go, oh my God, what is that? But it's amazing how
it's great. It's like a deep massage.
yeah. Moxibustion, all these different things that you offer. And can you give your address and the best way for people to reach you now?
Yeah, so the address for my practice, which is Red Cedar Health, is 929 South Eaton Street in Birmingham, Michigan. It's between 14 and 15 mile. And my phone number is 248-971-0319. And the email is just redcedarhealth@gmail.com.
Great. So again, my guest is Sarah Tennant. She is a really someone who has lived more than half of her life, certainly, living, working, understanding Chinese medicine. And how many people can really say they've lived half their life doing this already? So we'll be right back again. This is Elaine Grohman for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. We'll return in just a minute with my guest, Sarah Tennant. Don't go away.
The Empower Meditation Channel. Nonstop meditation music 24 hours a day in the new Empower Radio app. Music to empower your meditation, help you relax, sleep, or provide a calm background while you work. The Empower Meditation Channel is interruption free. Listen now with the Empower Radio app, free in the App Store, or listen online at empower.fm. Soothe your soul, calm your mind. The Empower Meditation Channel.
Okay, Simon, what are you wearing right now?
Nothing.
That's right. And what do people normally wear?
Clothes.
Exactly. So now mommy's going to teach you how to dress yourself. Clothes keep us warm, they look good, and if we go out without them, the neighbors will talk. So it's important to know how to get dressed. Here's how it's done. Underwear always comes first, name tag at the back, then pants, then shirt. Get the first button in the right hole, or you have to start all over. If you're wearing a tie, it goes over, round, through, and pull tight. Tuck your shirt into your pants and zip up your fly. Socks go in first, then shoes, right on right, left on left. With shoelaces, just take the ends, cross them over, switch the loops. The rabbit goes down the hole, pull tight, and you're left with bunny ears.
I love bunnies.
Good to know. Now remember, spots don't go with stripes, socks don't go with sandals, and if you've tucked in your shirt, wear a belt. Got it? Why are your pants on your head?
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat, or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed a trend. My humans do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket, but it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place, and then they act so surprised when I find them, but I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Now back to Elaine Grohman and Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back. This is Elaine Grohman on Empower Radio. Again, the show is going beyond medicine. And it's always a thrill to bring people to the airways. And it's amazing to think it literally can go all the way around the world at any time with podcasts and that kind of thing. My guest today is Sarah Tennant, a sweet, delightful, brilliant young woman who is an acupuncturist and a Chinese medicine practitioner here in Michigan, and the daughter of a precious friend of mine. So it's all lucky all the way around. So Sarah, let's talk about acupuncture so that people can begin to understand, first of all, what it is, what it does, and how it helps.
Yeah. So acupuncture is a technique where we use very thin needles. They don't have any medicine on them. They're not hollow. When most people think of a needle, they're thinking of a medical syringe that's either putting medicine in or taking some kind of fluid out. Ours are not like that at all. They're basically as thin as a hair. We could fit about 30 of our needles with inside one of those medical syringes. So they're all sterile, one-time use, and we put them into different acupuncture points along meridian systems in the body. Those acupuncture points are mainly located in the connective tissue, but also in the muscles as well. So we're sticking a needle, which is, you know, a piece of metal, so it's naturally conductive in nature, into the connective tissue, which is our electrical impulsing system.
So is that a part of the fascia?
Yeah, that's okay. The fascia, okay. Yeah, the connective tissue and fascia.
Okay, good.
So we're putting that needle into the connective tissue or these acupuncture points, and you can kind of spin the needle a little bit, or even just the connective tissue and fascia itself will actually grab onto the needle, and that's a way for us to actually conduct or change the signaling from the brain and the rest of the body. It also, most of these points are above major nerve and artery bundles, nerve bundles and arteries, so we can actually change the piezoelectric effect of the cells, which essentially is the dilating of vessels and moving of water and fluids between cells.
Which is essential that people need to think about.
Yeah.
So when you use the term meridians, mm-hmm. what are you defining?
So the meridians essentially are an energy pathway. So okay. They are a pathway to the organ itself in Chinese medicine.
Now, would you call that the neurological pathway? Is it part of the nervous system?
It could be compared to that in some ways, but there's more to it than that too, we believe. So this is also a way to access the emotional body and levels off of the physical body as well.
Right. And one of the things that people need to understand about the fascia, it's that mechanism that holds everything together. So what we have a tendency in our Western mind to think of individual parts that are separate from one another. And what we have forgotten is everything is connected. Mm-hmm. Everything is connected. So you put something someplace, it may have an effect elsewhere.
Absolutely. Well, the fascial system is so extensive that actually if we took everything else away, you could actually still tell what that person and recognize what that person looks like because the connective tissue is so vast and, mm-hmm. and elaborate. So in Western medicine, we kind of like have pushed that away. But in China, they've been studying fasciology, the study of fascia, for a while now, and have actually found these acupuncture points and identified them as little vortexes or vortices within the connective tissue. Mm, okay. And what they found is there's many more than the points that we even know and identify.
So as we spoke just a moment in the break, many people have a needle phobia. Mm-hmm. How do you help them to feel a little bit more comfortable about having acupuncture? And once they have it, what do they notice?
Yeah, you know, it's understandable that people have a needle phobia. Most kids have had like 35 shots these days by the time they're not even 8 years old.
And so, those things hurt.
Yeah, and those are not fun situations. Mm-hmm. And so I really start really gently with people at first. And there's a lot of other techniques that I have in addition that I'll use, including essential oil application on the skin, just using one drop of the oil, matching that with an acupuncture point, as well as sound too. So those are things that will help relax the person too and open them up to be more receptive to the treatment.
We'll talk a little bit more in depth about those three things because I think it's important. But as you, as the practitioner, you have studied so extensively what these meridians are immediately connected to or responsible for in terms mm-hmm. of the neurologic pathways.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you find happens when you have an insertion of a needle And how long does it take for the body to react? Is it immediate? Does it happen over time? What happens?
Yeah, for some people, it's immediate. Some people, you won't feel the needle at all. You really shouldn't feel the needle being inserted very much at all. You just want to feel what we call de qi sensation. It's a Chinese word, D-E-Q-I. That literally means the qi or that sensation arriving at the needle.
You're feeling it as a practitioner or the client?
Both. Yeah, okay. We're definitely trained to feel it as a practitioner. You can feel tension on the needle a little bit more.
Or the muscle grabs it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And the connective tissue. Or you can actually see the skin turn a little bit red around, releasing histamine and inflammation from the body. Some people, they won't feel that as much at first. They'll just be a little bit more relaxed, maybe have a good night's sleep that night. And then over time, the meridians will get activated more. So sometimes they'll start to feel things more strongly. But also the body has an intelligence of its own, the person's qi system. So I can stick a needle in and they might feel the sensation in a completely different area of their body because I didn't know they had jaw pain, but that's where they feel it go.
Okay. I was recently giving somebody an analogy of how energy is and has an innate intelligence and knows how to move. So let's say if you were to use an analogy of a completely dried riverbed, if you opened the dam above the stream and it flooded through, it would do more damage than good.
Right.
So if you gently allowed water to just begin to trickle through and then the earth is absorbing it and then the plants are reaching their root system to the water, and then it gradually starts to flow in a healthy thing, and then you have vibrant life.
Right.
So that's what we're so accustomed to in our Western world. We want a quick fix. Mm-hmm. We want it to happen right now.
Yeah.
But people don't realize you really don't want it right now.
Yeah, and I always have that conversation with my patients as well, that I know that some people want to see that immediate, really huge response. And I don't really do my treatments that way. I don't want someone to have a really strong response and then go back down, just like weight loss and dieting. Like you lose a lot of weight and then usually you gain it back pretty easily. Right. I more gear my treatments to really subtly and gradually bringing someone up to a higher plateau of being, of well-being.
Well, and also because what, as you mentioned earlier, and we both know, as I'm an energy healer, you're a different kind of energy healer, still working with the same energy, is that there may be a physiological after effect, of how people have been kind to their body nutritionally, whether they've had rest, what their thought processes are, what their emotional construct is, that you can't flip that on somebody right in a minute.
Right.
Nor would you want to because they wouldn't know how to integrate it.
Yeah. And I also always say, too, that I'm in the business of planting seeds, not only seeds in my backyard so that I can eat food, but also seeds in beings. And it's up to them if they're going to go back and water that plant and take care of it. I don't even know what plant it might turn into. That's up to them.
So speaking about the plants, let's talk about essential oils and how you're using that. And what are the essential oils that might be of benefit? And I know we always have to be careful because we can't prescribe here on this conversation. But what is historically known information about various plant life that is a concentrated form in an essential oil?
Absolutely. So essential oils are a type of herbal medicine, a very strong type of herbal medicine, because really they are the blood life of the plant. It takes pounds and pounds of an herb to get just a few drops of essential oil. So it's a highly condensed form of herbal medicine. So in that reason, they need to be used very carefully, and they should always be supervised from a licensed and an experienced practitioner if they're taking internal. I don't even really take them internally too much. But the skin is a really great medium to apply it onto. But again, it should be diluted a lot of times, depending on the oil, in a carrier oil, which would just be a massage oil or coconut oil, something like that. But that's
something
where
also clear and pure and natural.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. But this is where the aroma acupoint therapy system that my teachers, Tiffany Pollard and Peter Holmes, developed, where we will actually take one drop of the essential oil, of certain essential oils, and based on its energetics and properties, not only physically but emotionally and psychologically as well, we will match that with acupuncture points based on those energetic actions. And we use this on kids a lot too, diluted absolutely on kids, the oils. And we don't even have to use needles a lot of times. We can clear the same kind of blocks or really, really help that person a lot.
Now, how did they determine what what is the frequency or what is the energetics of the plant? How do they derive that information to determine what is the potency of a different
Yeah. So Peter Holmes, he studied aromatherapy and essential oils in Europe for a long time. He's also a Western herbalist as well. So he comes from that knowledge background of really just a scholar. He's gone into many libraries throughout Europe and had some detailed profiles of things that he's found and scrounged up. And then Tiffany also comes from a very intuitive perspective as well. So a lot of this information, she's not only been and downloaded over time, but we also, she's the one who owns the practice I work out of in Seattle. So we've tested these clinically over time now for about 10 years to actually come up with the oil and point combination that works the best or that helps to heal that condition the best. And then we developed these sequences from there.
Well, what I think was so important because many people don't understand, as you said, the potency of an essential oil. And many people kind of intertwine incorrectly the term aromatherapy with essential oil.
Yeah, absolutely.
So usually, and correct me if I'm wrong, aromatherapy can be a blending of many things that are pure or not pure, kind of as a distilled version that can be a little bit misleading to people.
Yeah, well, we always have to be cautious with the quality of oils. There are so many things that are adulterated these days. And whenever things are made in a commercial, really large operation, you're bound to, you know, get even if we're making lavender essential oil, for example, you're bound to get some grass and other things that are actually not even that plant that are also being distilled when you're doing it at that big of a scale. And then oftentimes, if it's not the exact profile that they want, they'll actually add chemicals back into a lot of oils. And then they're actually toxins, so they shouldn't be inhaled or put on the skin at all.
Oh, yeah. I've known of people who had enormous reactions.
Absolutely.
And almost detrimental to themselves. But so you're very wise. You want to have somebody who can guide you in what you're doing. And just like with anything, even in the Western medicine, you could take too much of any pharmacological agent, and that could be either helpful or detrimental.
Yeah.
To you.
And you always have to consider too that person's constitution or what they tend towards. So if someone is more hot in nature, you don't want to
use. Yeah, I want to talk about that.
Hot oils.
What does that mean? Because I've had many people say, well, there's too much fire or too much earth or too much wood. Or what does that mean?
So this is another way that we assess people in Chinese medicine. So each person has a constitution. There are five elements in Chinese medicine, and each person is, we have all five within us, but one is more predominant. So I'm a fire, for example. My red hair helps that too. I think it was escaping it for me. But I tend to be more hot in nature because of that, because fire is the predominant element for me. So cooling herbs that bring down the fire, or even moistening yin tonifying herbs, which is more the water, help to calm that down more. So
when you say that you have a tendency to be a fire, you mean that your body is maybe a little bit more active than somebody else's body might be? You might be
I get stimulated more easily,
More reactive to something.
Yeah, fire flares up and flares outward, so it can get heated more easily and flare up.
Okay.
So more emotions can come to the surface easily too with fires.
Okay. So you talked about acupuncture, you talked about you talked about essential oils. Now tell me about herbal medicines and how all of that is used over time to really help to have homeostasis in the body.
Yeah, so there's so many different ways that we can apply herbal medicine in Chinese medicine, not only with foods. We'll even, a lot of these herbs in our Materia Medica are foods, like dates and ginger or licorice, for example. These are all three of our biggest and most commonly used herbs. But we can apply
Chinese medicine?
Yeah, in Chinese medicine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They're called dat cao, that's dates, or gan cao is licorice. Shengjeng is ginger. So all very commonly used. So a lot of these things we're encountering a lot of times, and it's just about how we use it and how we can incorporate it in. And then we also will use decoctions a lot, which is just a water, an aqueous transmission of an herb where you're boiling that herb. And then you have this tea, essentially, this really, half an hour brewed tea. A lot of times we'll do that with roots and things like that. Mm-hmm. But also we'll use an herb called moxa, where we do moxibustion on the body. So this is a plant that we have many different forms of. There's stick-on forms and smokeless moxa sticks, or even the plant matter itself that will roll into a little ball and put on top of a needle and burn. And this helps to actually bring that warmth into the body for people that are more cold in nature, especially.
I've had the experience of someone using a moxa stick. Mm-hmm. So it burns. It kind of looks like a cigar.
Yeah.
And it smolders. It has a very pungent odor to it.
Right.
But what they do is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is they kind of move it around the needle to kind of warm the needle.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily putting it on the needle, in the needle, although they may.
Yeah, so there are many ways that we can apply the moxa. We even have boxes that you can fill with moxa and put on someone's back or on top of their uterus.
Is moxa a particular herb, or is it a blend of herbs?
It is a particular herb sometimes, but it can be a blend. Like in those smokeless moxa sticks, usually it's a blend of herbs. Typically when it's just the raw form, that's a very soft, kind of fluffy mortar and pestle. We grind it for a long period of time until it's soft and fluffy. That usually is a variety of mugwort, but it's a Chinese version, so it's in the Artemisia family.
So how are you finding, and I hope that you'll do this, and I'm going to request that you do this, is start having classes to teach people about what they could eat at various times, because it's seasonal also, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
We have gotten away from seasonal eating,
mm-hmm.
so we're eating things that maybe we should only eat in the spring and summer, or we're eating them in the fall,
exactly.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize that the chemicals within that body, your body chemistry is adjusting. And if you're putting something out of season,
right.
it might get you a little out of sorts.
I mean, a great example of that is watermelon. Watermelon is one of the coldest fruits that is that we have in Chinese medicine. So all foods can be categorized into not only their tastes, but also the meridians they go to and their temperature in our within our body when we take it in. So watermelon is one of the coldest. So you wouldn't want to eat watermelon in the middle of winter. And actually, I have a friend who will eat like half a watermelon at a time, and she usually gets chills after. So you can actually see
sense.
That come
it
through.
It makes sense if you think about it, this is when this plant naturally is growing, and
yeah.
then you eat it, and it's so
fruit.
Refreshing to you in the hot season.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's cooling because it's so much water.
Likewise, there are warming spices and warming foods that we can eat more in the wintertime that can be more beneficial there.
That's great. And are you finding that there's particular strains of particular plants and more of a, in the, they use a term, heirloom plants,
mm-hmm.
that means that they've been preserved in the integrity of the genomics of the plant,
mm-hmm.
without adulteration or x-rays or whatever the heck they do.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is also why us growing more plants actually in the U.S., we can grow a lot of these Chinese herbs here.
We can.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in Michigan, actually, and in the Northwest, too. There are similar climates to some areas in China. So there's a big movement of this in Washington State and in Portland, where they're growing a lot more herbs. There's also someone in Northern California who has the Chinese medicinal herb farm. And she's growing a lot of the highest quality stuff that I've seen around here. And if you look at like a bag of chrysanthemum flowers from her versus a bag of chrysanthemum flowers that we would get from China, the comparison is, there is no comparison because it's so much better quality. So we have to take that into account too, as people are wanting to take herbal medicine more.
Right. Without naming the person's name, I go and see a Chinese physician
mm-hmm.
here in Michigan, and I often see him walking around with a little jar with it. I said, what are those flowers you have mm-hmm. in your water? Mm-hmm. Well, they're chrysanthemums. I mean, you think of a chrysanthemum as a fall plant decorative out in your garden. You don't think of it as a medicinal herb.
Yeah, you'll always see people in China with goji berries and chrysanthemum flowers in their tea. This is a very traditional tea blend that is made for clearing the eyes. So it helps with stress, it helps with blood pressure, and it helps with any bloodshot eyes too.
I think I need that, Sarah.
It's a good one. It tastes good, too.
Can you have any on hand?
I do, actually.
Okay. So tell us now that you, when did you open your practice? And again, where can people meet you?
Yeah, I opened my practice in the beginning of June here.
Good.
And yeah, I'm usually there Monday through Friday. I'm going to be starting a series of different classes, including essential oil classes.
Wonderful.
And nutrition.
Wonderful.
A variety
Please
of other
let
things.
Me know,
Qigong as well.
I'll spread the word.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm going to work on a schedule for this next year, and 2017 I'm going to start all of this. So
good.
Yeah.
Are you aware of anyone here in Michigan that's trying to create a place to grow herbs that can be used, so we know the quality of them and You have them accessible to you?
Yeah, well, I'm going to try and do that this next year. Good. And two of my close friends, Elizabeth and Trevor, are amazing permaculturists. They're going to be helping part of that too. We want to create a teaching garden actually in the Metro Detroit area and a tea company with it. So,
well, I have somebody who that actually I had interviewed on the show who's in Scotland who has done that. And I know that his name is Hamish Martin. Hamish, I hope you're listening. And he is just doing that and teaching people how to not only grow it, he would be a wonderful resource for
Great.
You.
Love that.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. So what else do we need to know from you, Sweet Pea?
That's a good question. What else would you like to know?
So you're, let's talk about this particular kind of therapeutic Chinese massage.
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah, so Tui Na is a type of therapeutic massage, which is a little bit different than how we think of massage here. It's like kind of usually in the spa world here where it's more relaxing. Tui Na is a little bit more forceful sometimes.
I had it done. I didn't realize it was, and as the practitioner was going to do, she goes, oh, honey, this might hurt a little bit. And I almost jumped off the table, but she said, you'll be grateful after it's done.
Yeah, it's amazing afterward. And certainly there are some more gentle forms of it too. We can do it on pediatrics and kids a lot too. They love it to help them go to bed and things like that. But Tui Na, we actually use to reset bones in China. So that's how on the aggressive scale it can get. They'll actually massage the tendons and muscles to the point where they can move that bone back into place. So it's like a deep
natural
massage.
Natural tension there once there's been a trauma.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we'll also be doing acupressure and things like that, where you'll hold certain acupuncture points and do certain techniques on there. And then you can move that meridian and that entire area a lot more too.
Sweet Pea, you need a radio show and a television show. I'm putting that out into the universe
right
now.
I'll get on that.
Because it's such essential. You know, what's astonishing to people is they don't realize that in the Western world, in the allopathic model, the third leading cause of death is medical error.
I know. This is unfortunately
shocking.
Way more than I'd
shocking.
Like to see.
And of course, that includes days. Not just something that someone is inadvertently doing in a hospital situation, but the misuse or the misdiagnosis or the misingestion, incorrect dosage of medications, interactions with medications.
And that's where collaboration and communication just needs to be at the forefront of medicine as we're starting to integrate more of these complementary systems in, and other doctors that have been compartmentalized need to start communicating with each other so that everyone can actually be on board and know that that person is doing what they're
supposed
to. That's
a really important thing, Sarah, because how do you help people? You know, for the last 15 years, I've been working with people in medicine to help them to understand energy medicine is what's driving the body.
Yeah.
So what? How have you found the interaction with people in the allopathic model, Western model, for those who aren't familiar with that term, to see this is not as against them, but as a blending, just like you need to have spiritual care if someone had trauma, or you need good nutrition. You need all of these things together.
Yeah. And I think really now that research is really coming out with acupuncture and proving over and over again how beneficial it is in conjunction with conventional treatments like cancer, for example, they just showed in research that if someone actually gets acupuncture done while they're receiving chemotherapy, that chemo will actually go directly where it needs to go to the cancer cells instead of affecting the entire body and causing more side effects and adverse things.
And I understand that it also can, if someone does have a particular cancer in a particular area, the acupuncture can prevent the metastatic action of spreading elsewhere in the body. Doesn't mean it's gonna, depending upon where, when and where you were diagnosed, you know.
And it also just helps moderate so many of the side effects that come with the conventional treatment, and just helps to bring that person to a better place of well-being, even if they're going through this harsh, intense treatment load.
Now, you had mentioned something about childbirth, helping someone to conceive.
Yeah.
Also, in the midst of actually physically giving birth, what about in the dying process? What about helping someone literally, and really I want to clarify this because sometimes people have a misunderstanding, like I used to work in hospices, you know. It's not promoting death. It is allowing it.
Right, exactly.
Because sometimes people can be in so much pain that they can't die, which actually creates more suffering.
Yeah, and that comes with all energy medicine. Like, again, I'm just there as the vessel. It's not like I can control what that person's chi or energy system is going to do because it has an intelligence and a plan all its own. So I just step in to help and allow and be that connection for them and to help reactivate that. And then their body is going to choose if they're ready to stay or if they're ready to go.
Right, right. Again, my guest is Sarah Tennant. Her wonderful practice is in Birmingham, Michigan. It's called
Red Cedar Health.
Red Cedar Health. But your email, or excuse me, your website has a different name.
Yeah, we're in the process of transitioning that over. So it will be redcedar-health.com pretty soon, but you'll still be able to access it through Tenet Therapeutics.
Okay, tenettherapeutics.com right now. So just so you have that, the consistency there. If they just Googled your name, Sarah Tenet, and acupuncture, would they be able to find you?
Yeah, that should come up that way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't miss her if her little face is there. She's got this sweet little twinkly eyes and beautiful flame red hair and just beautiful energy about you. So what else is the last thing that you want people to know? We just have a few
I guess
we
the only thing we didn't discuss is cupping, which has gotten a lot of you know, hype because of the Olympics these days. But really, this is a traditional Chinese technique. And typically what we do, fire cupping. So that's where we use glass cups. And usually I light a cotton ball on fire and quickly put that into the glass cup. And that allows the oxygen to get sucked out. And that creates a suction effect on the skin. So it's like a very deep tissue massage. We can actually help to pull the fascia and connective tissue off of the muscles so that it helps lubricate itself more, and also while pulling stagnant or stale blood from injuries or other things to the surface so that that deep venous system can actually refresh itself so fresh blood can get to that area.
And I've seen it where there may be a little bit of a blistering that happens. It's kind of helping the body to detox a little bit more.
Yeah, there shouldn't be like blisters or burns, but there is like a redness that'll come up on the skin, red dots or even purple dots. And that is a level of stagnation that's present. So you'll see, even if someone has like really, really dark purple, almost black spots that come up, that'll fade away within a few days. But then as we do cupping more and more, those spots will get lesser in color or not show up at all over time.
So one of the things that I think that is so important for everyone to know is that this is really beginning a process of helping us to re-educate ourselves.
Absolutely.
About, excuse me, how do we care for ourselves throughout the continuum of our lives, and not just in the immediacy of a problem, but certainly to know that if there is a problem, and immediately we can work with acupuncture, cupping, or something of that nature. So again, thank you so much, Sarah, for being a part of the show.
You.
My guest has been Sarah Tenet. She has her Red Cedar Health in Birmingham, Michigan. Please take a look at her website right now is tenettherapeutics.com. She's a delight. She's a wealth of information. She's spent half her life learning this. I'm Elaine Groman. This is Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. Go out and live your best life. It's the one you got. Thank you.